It's time to go back in time.
Sound off, 450. They brawled all over the place. It wasn't just a straight wrestling match. Here she was doing wrestling moves, and she had a setup for these wrestling moves, and she needed cooperation from both of them to do them. And it just, you know, they have her positioned here on the show, clearly, as one of the top stars. And she won this match. This was a match for the Gift of the Gods Championship, and Sexy Star won. She tapped out Marty the Moth with a cross arm breaker, which makes her the first female to hold a singles title in Lucha Underground. And it also means that she has now earned herself a shot at the title, the Lucha Underground Championship. And I can see where this is going, and I have but one request, which is hard because I know this is a tape show, so it's not like anything's going to change. Whatever it is that they have planned is already set in stone. But I have one thing to say, and that is this. As much as I am a fan of the monster Matanza, big Matanza fan, I sincerely hope that he drops the title before Sexy Star cashes in her title shot. I don't even want to think about the idea of him losing his champion. And he's been blowing through guys left and right. I mean, he's a monster. He's been beating everybody. Nobody can stop him. I don't even want to entertain the idea of Matanza's reign coming to an end at the hands of Sexy Star.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 470 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Survivor Series Sunday, November 20th, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. So I got an email yesterday from Russ. He was at the Big Time Wrestling Show in Altoona, Pennsylvania. On Friday night, James Ellsworth announced that he is now officially signed with WWE. And he will not be doing any more indie appearances going forward. But the bigger story, Matt Hardy was there, Broken Matt, and Russ was wearing a Solid Monster shirt from our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. And Matt Hardy, in full accent, looks over at Russ and says, "Ah, Solid Monster, I have heard of this man on the social media." I so wish I could have been there to see that. I'm so pissed I wasn't there to see that. Especially in the accent. I think I would have just lost my shit. But that is a fantastic segue into my plug here for the annual Black Friday sale on ProWrestlingTees.com. It kicks off this Tuesday, November 22nd at noon Eastern and runs through the following Tuesday, November 29th, also at noon Eastern. That's one full week to get 20% off every order when you use the code Black Friday in our store. That's Black Friday, all one word. Punch that in at checkout, you'll get 20% off. If you are one of the first 300 orders on the entire website on Tuesday, they'll even throw in a free shirt. You can't argue with free. So this is really the best time to pick up a Sound Off shirt. If you have been thinking about it, or if maybe you want to get more than one, you want to buy one as a gift for another fan of the show. And you never know if Broken Matt or someone else might call you out at a show for wearing one. So show some love for the podcast. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. We've got over 24 shirts in our store. I usually buy mine in soft cotton. I think the soft cotton is great, to each their own, but just be aware that when I do the soft cotton, I do usually go up one size if I do that. So just a little FYI for you. So head on over there. Also, you can support the show by using our Audible link. Audible is still offering listeners of this podcast a free trial of their service for 30 days. You can sample it. You can check out all the different audiobook titles they've got available. A lot of wrestling books up there. The Death of WCW. A lot of you guys have cashed in on that book. I know you've been enjoying that a lot. I just got a tweet from somebody this morning who cashed in on the Death of WCW book. So use our link if you're thinking about doing it, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. Get one free audio book. And even if you cancel your trial within 30 days so you don't get billed, you get to keep your book. No matter what. It belongs to you. So audibletrial.com/solomonster is the link to use for that. And last but not least, if you want to become a PayPal VIP, you may do so. On our website, thesolomonster.com, you'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on the show. $30 or more will get you a shout-out and a quick plug for your own podcast, YouTube channel, social media channel, business, what have you. I want to say thank you to all of our VIPs who donated this week, including John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Yvonne Bruiser Balick, Rodney Hot Rod Cologne, Keith the Conqueror Krajnik, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Nemesis Nathan Moyer, Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Hot Stuff Hector Pena, Tony the Tiger Boylan, Christian Combat Reyes, Mass Grave Micah Harshaw, Kind of a Big Deal Corey Blake, The Montreal Mauler Patrick Pacheco, American Misery Jordan DiPaola, Riot Squad John Dagger, and you can look for the user Loopy Tales on YouTube. Check out his video titled Trump Supporter in Australia, hitting the streets of Sydney to see what the folks down there think of our new president-elect. It's a very interesting video. Montesi, Antoine Moore, The Black Buck, Matt Harrigan. I want to show some love, as I have been doing many weeks now, for Matt and what he's doing with the Superkick Foundation. Go to superkickfoundation.org. And you can make a contribution there. Again, they're buying clothing and t-shirts from independent wrestlers to use to clothe the homeless. It's a good cause. They could really use your support. So again, check them out, superkickfoundation.org. Matt's a good guy, and he's doing a good thing. I've got Survivor Series predictions and a full review on last night's awesome NXT TakeOver show to get to. We got a lot of stuff to get to. But we begin, unfortunately, with sad tweet. A sad tweet that made some news this week. Vader, on his Twitter, at It's Vader Time, posted this a few days ago. He says, told by two heart doctors at this time that my heart is worn out from football and wrestling. I have 2 years to live. Congestive heart failure reality. That sucks. That really, really sucks. I had a grandmother who actually had congestive. In fact, I think that's what she died from, was congestive heart failure. I don't know that they could put a timetable on that, but I mean, I guess his doctors would know more than I do. I found it kind of odd when I read that they would just flat out say, hey, you've got 2 years left to live, but we don't know what the rest of his physical condition is like. I mean, again, the guy, he's been through, a lot of wars on the football field and in the wrestling ring, and I'm sure he's got probably other health issues too, and his body is beaten up, and so that might have something to do with it. I don't know if he's done other things recreationally over the course of his career. God knows we've heard about a lot of wrestlers who have passed away from enlarged hearts. I would hope that, that's not the case with Vader, but who knows? So you hear that and it kind of takes you back a little bit. I know he was in a really bad car accident recently. He posted about that. He put a picture up of what the car looked like. The car was completely mangled. He was lucky to walk away from that still alive. He put a picture up of his face. His face was all bruised and battered. It was terrible. I guess what must have happened is he had the accident and he was in the hospital, or he went to the doctor, and maybe that's how it was diagnosed. That would be my guess, as opposed to just a routine kind of annual checkup. So I was going to say, in a weird kind of way, that car accident that almost killed him may have saved his life, but I guess not if the doctors are telling him that he's on borrowed time. It's terrible. Obviously best wishes to him. Hopefully he's got much more than 2 years. Believe me, take it from me with members of my own family. You hear things about how you've got this long, you've got this much time left because you've got this disease, and they don't know what they're talking about. Or they think they do. It's a guess at best. You just do you, you take care of yourself. And, I think Vader can probably and hopefully stick around a lot longer than 2 years. Hopefully he can just manage his diet and do whatever his doctors tell him to do. He's a big man. I mean, I know he's lost a bunch of weight from when he was at his peak. I've seen pictures of him. He still works out like a beast, so he's in good shape, but he's still a big man. I'm sure that doesn't help, especially when it comes to the heart. You put a lot of stress on your heart, so hopefully he can do whatever he needs to do to maybe, again, diet-wise or what have you, maybe that can help. But it's also a good reminder that Vader is not in the WWE Hall of Fame. There is no reason for Vader not to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. And if ever there was a time to put him in, not because he's sick, but because he deserves to be in there, Orlando next year would be a great time. You know, this is not a charity induction. Vader is legit one of the best big men to ever set foot inside a wrestling ring. I mean, we can have, and I've gotten mailbag questions about this, we can have that debate about who is the best big man of all time. Is it Bruiser Brody? Is it The Undertaker? Some people think it's Kane. You know, you may not even be a fan of Kane's matches, but look how long that guy's gone for. Look at all the different characters and gimmicks and turns and everything that this guy's been through over almost 20 years. That's pretty impressive. And he's still coming off the top rope with top rope clotheslines and stuff. So you can make the argument about Kane or The Undertaker and Bam Bam Bigelow. I hear his name mentioned a lot. For my money, Vader, if he's not number one, he's number two. If you want to maybe put Undertaker in the top spot, we can have that debate. But there's no doubt that Vader is one of the best big men of all time. And he was at the Hall of Fame this year to induct Stan Hansen. Next year, I think it should be Stan inducting him, or Sting, or Mick Foley inducting Vader into the Hall of Fame. Three of his greatest rivals. Any of those three, I think, would make a fine choice to induct him, but I hope they do it. I hope they do the right thing. The fallout continued this week from the Joey Styles story. I don't know why. It seems pretty cut and dry to me, but there was still a lot being said about Joey Styles being fired from Evolve. So just to recap here, Gabe Sapolsky, who runs Evolve, fired Joey Styles last weekend after he defied a direct order not to make any political jokes on the air during their show. So apparently Gabe had a meeting. It wasn't just an edict to Joey. He had a meeting with everybody, I think the entire locker room, about staying away from any political humor, political jokes. Obviously, this election has been very divisive and has been a source of great stress for a lot of people. And we are escapist entertainment. We want to leave that in the real world and just focus on wrestling. No political jokes. And Joey went and he made an off-color political joke on the air. And he then went after the fact, Joey did, and posted a mea culpa online talking about how he apologized to everybody after the show, the entire locker room. He apologized to the female ring announcer who he made the joke to, and he was very, very apologetic. And he also went out of his way to mention how nobody was offended by what I said, but I apologized anyway because I guess I'm a great guy. And also, even though Jeremy Botter, who runs the Flow Sports, the Flow Slam service, which this was Evolve's first live event on Flow Slam. This is a big deal. This is a big deal for them and a big night. And I'm sure that was part of why Gabe didn't want them to touch any political stuff at all either. You got to remember that. So Gabe's probably thinking about that as well. Jeremy Botter, who I guess was there, he runs Flow Slam or is one of the people who does. You know, in the letter, Joey was like, well, even, you know, Jeremy Botter and all these other people weren't offended. And then Jeremy Botter went on social media and he said, well, actually, that's not true. I was very upset by what happened, despite what Joey wants you to believe. And so it's turned into this whole giant shit show. So what happened this week is Chikara and Beyond Wrestling, both of which Joey also had been working with, they then came out and also cut ties with him. And now people are losing their minds over how unfair all of this is. Oh, it's like he's being blackballed. It's so unfair. And so Dawn Marie, if you remember Dawn Marie from ECW and, you know, her whole lesbian storyline with Tori Wilson on SmackDown. Dawn Marie, out from the doldrums. We haven't even heard from her in God knows how long. She posted an open letter on Twitter regarding this whole Joey Styles situation. And basically she buried everyone. She buried Gabe for being what she called a pussy about the situation, and how back at ECW, Paul Heyman, who Gabe worked under, would never have fired Joey for something like this. In fact, he would have used the situation as a way to make money. She buried him. She buried Mike Quackenbush of Chikara for firing Joey, among other things she buried him for. She buried the fans. She even shamed Joey for sitting back and allowing all of this to happen without fighting back. Now, on Quackenbush, she said he has, you know, he's been around long enough to know the good guys from the bad guys in this business. Wasn't there some controversy with Dawn Marie a few years ago with her Wrestlers Rescue charity? Remember that whole thing where she was accused of scamming people out of their money? I remember Stevie Richards and the Blue Meanie making a big fuss about that. I'm reading this and I'm like, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Back up a little bit here. Didn't you have your own issues? I don't know how I would take all of this coming from her, but nonetheless, I don't know, maybe that whole situation was worked out. I don't remember ever hearing about a resolution. I just remember there was a whole big controversy about it, and some ECW people came out and were very upset, and something about Kamala not getting money that he was supposed to get, and then I never heard anything about it again. But the guy was told, here's the thing about the whole situation that just, you know, it's like giving me a headache, and why this is really, as far as I'm concerned, not a big story. The guy was told not to do something by his boss, and he did it anyway. That's why he got fired. What's so hard to understand about that? He didn't want him to be associated with his company. That is his right. Chikara is supposed to be a family-friendly promotion. Phoenix, you know, Phoenix from Lucha Underground supposedly was kicked out of the building at the King of Trios for cussing out loud during his match. Kevin Owens also dropped an F-bomb once during a match in Chikara, and I don't know that they ever booked him again after that. So that tells you how far they go to, you know, protect their product, I guess, from what they would consider to be anything non-PG, basically. Plus, the whole reason Joey Styles was even in Chikara was through some connection that Quackenbush made with Gabe. So I'm not at all surprised that they would want to cut ties too. Once Gabe did it, it was probably just a matter of time. And again, it's his promotion. That is his right. So at the end of the day, he did something he was not supposed to do. He was specifically told, don't do this, and he did it anyway. So as far as I'm concerned, this is all much ado about nothing. Let me just get into some quick Raw and SmackDown thoughts on the shows this past week, and then we'll talk about Survivor Series. Raw, this past Monday, was live from Buffalo, New York. Raw Twitter poll, 1,700 votes, 54% thumbs up, 46% thumbs down. That's the first positive poll result for the show in many, many weeks. It was a totally backloaded show, which meant that all the good stuff came in the third hour. The rest of it was pretty much hit or miss. Were it not for the Goldberg-Lesnar stuff and the closing angle with Team SmackDown invading and brawling with Team Raw, both non-wrestling segments, by the way, happened to be the best ones on the show. Were it not for those two, this would have been an easy thumbs down. So it's worth noting that you can have one or two really hot, really strong angles on a show, and it can save a show. It could change your entire perception of the show, and they managed to do that. They had two very strong non-wrestling angles on this show. I thought that at least got me excited. It certainly didn't get me less excited. They actually have go-home shows sometimes that make me less interested in the pay-per-view that Sunday. This was not one of those times. I will say this got me more excited for the two main event matches on this show. They had tons of security in the ring, lined up diagonally across the ring to separate Goldberg from Lesnar in their segment. I thought it made for a great visual. The crowd in Buffalo, by the way, massively into Bill Goldberg. This might have been even stronger of a response than the night he came back, which is saying a lot because I know that reaction he got when he came back really took him aback and blew him away. WWE would love for the crowd in Toronto tonight to react to him the same way, but Hey, I guess by the time a lot of you guys listen to this, you'll know the answer to that, but I suspect that may not be the case. On this night, though, he was the hottest thing on the entire show. Goldberg was pissed that Heyman and Lesnar have been talking about his wife and kid. He said, if you do it again, I'm going to rip off your head, Paul Heyman, and I'm going to feed it to him. I'm going to feed it to Brock Lesnar. That's some Negan-level shit from The Walking Dead right there from Goldberg. Then came the money line with Heyman telling Goldberg that Brock would beat him up so badly that Goldberg's 10-year-old son would look at Brock and call him daddy. And Goldberg freaked out. He started killing all the security guys. He clotheslined one of them over the top rope so hard that Goldberg almost went out with him. I'm watching this. I'm like, oh, there goes your Survivor Series main event. But he stopped himself. The other guards ran scared. Finally, Goldberg was the last man in the ring. He was the only one left. He was baiting Brock into coming in. The crowd was going nuts for them. And Brock was kind of teasing it. He ripped off his shirt. He threw it at Goldberg. He was teasing that he was going to come in and we're going to have this big brawl. But then he bailed. He bailed to massive boos. This crowd could not have been any more. Just the crowd, the segment itself, the way they handled it, the way they presented it, what they did with these two guys, this could not have gone any more perfectly than it did, right down to the two of them not touching and saving it for the pay-per-view. Now, Goldberg told NBC Sports a few days ago that he tweaked his shoulder during the segment, which I think is an ominous sign going into this match tonight. I said it last week. I said Goldberg's going to get hurt. Did I not say this? I didn't know that it was going to be before the pay-per-view. But I said Goldberg's getting hurt. You don't come back after 12 years away from the ring, almost 50 years old, with an opponent like Brock Lesnar, and not make it out of the match unscathed. The two of them didn't even touch, and already he's hurt. Now I said this a month or so ago, and some people thought I was nuts when I pitched a 10-minute match for a Survivor Series main event, but I'll reiterate what I said back then. This match should not go longer than 10 minutes. Between the video package, the entrances, and the match itself, you can easily stretch all of that out to half an hour, which is fine. Goldberg's going to be blown up 5 minutes in anyway. You know it. You know he is. He's sweating like a beast just in these brawls. I think he looks great. He's in great shape. But you look at him, he looks like he's heaving. It's not easy. I mean, you can be cosmetically in the best shape that you've ever been in, but, you know, wrestlers say it all the time when they do interviews. Oh, you know, being in shape and being in ring shape are two different things. How could Goldberg be in ring shape? He hasn't wrestled in 12 years. This match came together, like, so quickly. There was talk that maybe it would be at the Rumble, at the Alamo Dome, or WrestleMania. They're doing it at Survivor Series. I don't think that this is something that Goldberg knew about 6 months ago. He didn't know that he was going to be wrestling a match at Survivor Series. So he hasn't really had a lot of time to prepare for this. It would be in everybody's best interest to keep this, you know, not 3 minutes long like a Goldberg squash back in the day, but keep this as short as you can possibly keep it. 10 minutes, I think, roughly, give or take, would be a fine length for this match. It does not have to go longer than that. You've got a bunch of Survivor Series elimination matches. You know some of those are going to go 20, 30 minutes. I mean, it is a 4-hour show. I'm sure they're going to add another match or two at the last minute tonight. But it does not have to be longer than that. And, you know, you keep it relatively short, relatively stiff. You know it's going to be stiff between these two guys. And just let them fight. That's what people want to see. They don't want to see a long, drawn-out wrestling match with wrestling holds or 15 suplexes. They want to see these two big guys beat the piss out of each other and fight. If you give them that, that's all you need to do. As long as Goldberg doesn't get so hurt during the match that he can't continue, I think that they can pull off a good match. Now, the end of the show had Stephanie and Mick Foley in the ring meeting with Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. My absolute favorite moment from this was Shane McMahon telling Stephanie that SmackDown Live was a better show than Raw, and the entire crowd cheers, smart people, and break into a giant yes chant. I thought that was great. And even better, Stephanie then turns to the crowd, she's on the mic, and she just reminds everybody, hey, you guys are at Raw. You do realize that, right? I'm like, oh yeah, they do. It's funny because it's true. Even funnier was when Stephanie brought out Team Raw and they teased that they might beat up Shane and Daniel Bryan, and all of a sudden the SmackDown guys come out from the crowd. It's AJ Styles and Ambrose is coming out with Ellsworth and Randy Wyatt and Bray Wyatt. Loud chants of AJ Styles from this Raw crowd. Styles and Owens, the two champs, ripped on each other for a bit. Jericho put Styles on the list. People went nuts for that. You know, that list, I said this on Twitter, that list is more over than 90% of their roster. And 90% might actually be generous. Some of you were like, only 90? I think you got a point. It's probably a little higher than that. You know, the sad part is, even they know it. Even WWE knows it. Jericho was on Live Audio Wrestling. He did an interview a few weeks ago, and he said he told Vince McMahon that the list, he said the same thing. He said, the list is more over than half your roster. And Vince agreed. Vince agreed and said, it's too bad the list can't work. If the list could work a match, it would be the champion right now. So Bray got on the mic. He got to talk a little bit too. He accused Braun Strowman of turning on his brothers. Seth Rollins got on the mic and started talking about him and Roman Reigns being on the same page, which was weird, you know, how all of a sudden they're like buddy-buddy. Like, if I'm Roman Reigns, I would pop this guy in the mouth every time he even mentions my name. Instead, Roman stood there, he's shaking his head, yep. Ambrose punched Jericho, a huge brawl broke out, Reigns gave Superman punches to both Orton and Bray and got booed for it. But the crowd loved it when Reigns and Rollins, they resurrected the old Shield powerbomb and they threw AJ Styles out of the ring onto all the other SmackDown guys. A big, big pile of guys all went down. The crowd actually booed the Raw guys standing tall in the end. On Raw, they booed the Raw guys. I love how on their own show the Raw team got booed. I think these fans are well aware of what the better show is. I think that much was obvious coming out of this. So this was great. I thought this was great. I thought the Goldberg-Lesnar stuff was great, and that was enough for me to really make this show. Now, it was not all great. I thought the Brian Kendrick-Sin Cara match was boring as all hell. I thought this sucked. It might have actually been, if I just paid attention to, like, as a match itself, I'm sure it was okay. But whatever point in the show that was, I'm just sitting there watching this, and I'm like, getting angry. I'm like, really? This is the match that you're giving us here? Really? I just did not like this at all. And you know, that 205 Live show cannot come soon enough, because this Cruiserweight stuff on this show is just dying a horrible death. It is dying a horrible death. Nothing different, nothing special about it. I mean, ooh, they have purple ropes. I guess that's different. Other than that, nothing different or special about it. Look, I don't doubt that this 205 Live is going to be night and day compared to what we see here on this show. It will be way more in line with what I think a lot of us expected out of this division when they first announced it. And hopefully a lot more variety in terms of the talent also. I saw Akira Tozawa is wrestling now on some of the NXT live events. I saw he had a match with Jack Gallagher the other night. So Gallagher is finally in, thank God. I expect them to be on the show when it debuts next week. It's only a week away, you know, from as I record this, about 9 days away. So you know, after Thanksgiving, the show's going to debut, and we'll see how it is. Here's the thing about the Cruiserweights. You know, I'll end this Cruiserweight thing on this. The Cruiserweight division should not be boring. It should never be boring. It may not be your thing. You may not care about a lot of these guys, you know, personally. But the one thing the Cruiserweight should never, ever be are boring. And this match bored me to tears. And it's not like Brian Kendrick can't have an exciting match. He had a bunch of them in the Cruiserweight Classic. I'm not ragging on Kendrick. Whatever it is they have Kendrick doing and they're telling these guys to do or not to do, that's what I'm ragging on. That's the problem that I have. Because we saw it only a few weeks ago. We know what these guys are capable of. We know the kind of show that WWE is capable of putting on with these guys, and I'm hopeful we'll get that next week. But I'm watching this and I'm like, oh my, you know, it's like, this is not what this is supposed to be. And from what I understand, they're going to stay on Raw as well. And the storylines that we see on Raw are going to continue on 205 Live. So the two shows will have something of a synergy. Storylines will go from show to show. At this point, as much as I'm looking for some variety on Raw, you know, I've seen this Cruiserweight division now for 2 months. I would be perfectly fine if they just took them off Raw altogether and just had the 205 Live show. Just give them their own show. Or you know what? Put some of them on SmackDown. That's fine, because I trust that on SmackDown, they would probably know what to do with these guys. I mean, I know Vince is still running the show on both Raw and SmackDown. It's not like Vince has nothing to do with SmackDown. But my understanding was always that both shows would have their own unique writing team or writing crews. And so whoever's doing that on the SmackDown side, they seem to know what they're doing. And maybe that's the better alternative. Just have Kalisto win, which I think he will. I think Kalisto is going to win at Survivor Series, and then they could just take the entire division and put it on SmackDown. I think that might be the way to go. After the show, they aired a State of WWE special on the network with Renee Young moderating a debate of sorts between Stephanie and Mick Foley, Shane and Daniel Bryan. And this was something else. This was their State of WWE address, but I want to talk about the state of Mick Foley here for a minute. This was not one of his finest nights. He was stumbling and stammering over his words. He would lose his train of thought. When Renee asked him if he could ever see himself working with Daniel Bryan, you know, like kayfabe. You ever see yourself working with Brian, you know, the SmackDown general manager? He launched into this really, really weird, emotional diatribe about what a great person Stephanie McMahon is, the commissioner of Raw, and how she's this great philanthropist and Connor's cure and something about going on his Twitter page and buying socks. I was embarrassed watching this. I was embarrassed for him. I mean, having just sat through 3 hours of Raw, it's bad enough having to sit there at 11:30 at night listening to him fawning all over Stephanie. I even saw where he did an interview with ESPN this week saying that Stephanie would make a great president of the United States because of her leadership qualities. It's like, oh my God, enough already. That's all I hear when he's talking about Stephanie. That's all I ever hear. But what any of this had to do with the question that Renee Young asked him, I have no idea. I guess he misheard and maybe thought she was asking about Stephanie and not Daniel Bryan. I mean, everybody else seemed to know what she was asking, to the point where even Shane McMahon had to finally butt in, and he flat out asked, like, what does that have to do with Daniel Bryan? Like, he was asking the question that everybody else was thinking. And Mick kept going on, and he started to insinuate that we all know how this story ends. This was also weird. He's like, we all know how this story ends. Like, you know, he was talking about how proud he is to be the Raw general manager and how they're going to win at Survivor Series, but we all know how this story ends. As if to say, like, we all know that Stephanie is going to fire me. And I said that from day one. She will inevitably slap him right off the Raw roster. And watching this, I think it would be in everybody's best interest for that to happen sooner rather than later. Because Foley is just a mess right now. I mean, he is floundering in this role. It's just not working. It's just not working. And you know, the last time Foley had a really bad night on Raw, which might have been those Cruiserweight introductions, somebody emailed me and they asked me if I think all of the chair shots to the head might have something. And I don't think he wasn't joking. Like, he was asking me, do you think all the abuse and all the chair shots to the head might have something to do with what we're seeing here? And I'm starting to think there might actually be something to that. You know, he loses his train of thought a lot. I mean, look, I do too sometimes. And I'm a lot younger than Mick Foley. But, like, especially here, they would ask him something and there'd be this long, awkward silence. And it would almost be like he was struggling to come up with what he was going to say. And look, we all know the physical abuse that this guy took over his career. You cannot take the kind of bumps that he took and the shots to the head that he took and not have cognitive problems. You just can't. It's impossible. It's just not possible. All of these guys signing on to this WWE lawsuit claiming CTE and brain trauma because they suffered a few bad concussions. Think of all the concussions that Foley sustained over his career. Diagnosed and undiagnosed. It's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying to think about. It's amazing he's still as lucid and articulate as he is. Because when Foley is on, he's on. You know, it's like he's never skipped a beat. But when he's not, it's really difficult to watch. And I do wonder, you know, how much of this has to do with that. And if that's the case, believe me, the last thing I want to do, I'm not mocking the guy for that at all. That's not what I'm doing. But he has a role to play on this show, and this just isn't the best role for him right now. That was made abundantly clear by watching this special. Now, the other news coming out of this special was Daniel Bryan, who got into it with Mick Foley. They had one of these work shoot arguments, you know, between the two GMs, and Foley was suggesting that I care more about being general manager of Raw than you do, and all you want to do is go back and wrestle. And Bryan turned it around on Foley and criticized him for suggesting that I want to still be wrestling when you yourself, when you quit WWE in 2001, went to TNA to wrestle. Even though his timeline was way off there. Foley actually wrestled Randy Orton and Ric Flair in WWE years later before he ever went to TNA. He didn't go to TNA until 2008. But Bryan also mentioned guys like Sami Zayn and Cesaro, who he accidentally called Claudio. which is his real name, and how they want to come to SmackDown Live. They don't want to be on Raw. Understand that this is all part of the show, of course. Bryan and Foley have no beef, nor is this the first instance of Bryan mentioning TNA. He's done it at least once that I can remember on Talking Smack. I think it was when they had AJ Styles on and he mentioned him being a TNA champion. But it's still wild to hear him mention TNA with Shane and Stephanie sitting, like, you know, 3 feet away from him. This is one of the things that worries me about Talking Smack possibly airing on a tape delay when that Cruiserweight show debuts. You know, the live format for these shows is the best format. So I hope that continues. But aside from the Foley-Bryan stuff, the rest of this I thought was just pretty pedestrian. Shane didn't say much. I think he was still winded from being part of that brawl at the end of Raw. Stephanie was Stephanie. You know, she's exactly what you would have expected. When Foley or Bryan would kind of go off the reservation a little bit, things would start to get interesting. Things would start to get a little bit heated. She would try her hardest to suck the fun right out of it and steer things back to promoting the pay-per-view, which they should have been doing, but, you know, people didn't want to hear, hey, Survivor Series this Sunday. They wanted to hear Bryan talk about TNA and talk about what a hypocrite Mick Foley is. But she would, you know, just steer it back to the pay-per-view, guys. Come on now. But the stuff when Foley was talking about Stephanie, that to me stands out more than anything. It was just really hard to watch. It was really, really hard to watch. SmackDown Live. This was the 900th episode of SmackDown with appearances by Edge and The Undertaker. We also had an Intercontinental title match between Dolph Ziggler and The Miz. And The Miz is once again your Intercontinental Champion. They changed the title back to Miz before Survivor Series, which means it'll be Miz defending against Sami Zayn, not Dolph Ziggler defending against Sami Zayn. That tells me that Zayn is winning the title tonight. They had a real good match. They usually do. Ziggler and Miz have good chemistry. They had a good match. Ziggler had a small package, but poor choice of words right there. He applied a small package. There you go. That makes more sense. He applied a small package. I would, you know, far be it for me to pass judgment on Dolph Ziggler. He had a small package on the Miz near the ropes, close enough for Maryse to reach in. She gave him a shove. She reversed the cradle, so Miz pinned Ziggler. The referee didn't see the shove, so the Miz is now, what would he be, a sixth time, I think, they said, Intercontinental Champion? I've lost track. Oney Lorcan, the former Biff Busick, made his SmackDown debut. He lost in 2 minutes to Kalisto, who unfortunately slipped, trying to do a springboard at one point off the ropes. I guess that's just one of those lucha things that he does. Nikki Bella and Carmella went to a no contest when the ladies from Team Raw ran in to beat them all down. It was very weird watching Bayley as part of this gang assault. But there she was, hugging and thugging. She was, you know, stomping a mud hole in somebody. To me, the most hilarious part about this entire segment was Nia Jax. Nia Jax tried to commit suicide by running herself through a wall at ringside. So I guess, you know, Becky Lynch was sitting down, she was propped up against the barricade, and she moved. But she moved too early, and so it just looked like Nia, when she launched herself, she just ran. It just looked like she decided to run right through a wall and take herself out. I laughed my ass off. This was high comedy. I love this. Somewhere in here, I'm not quite sure where or how it happened, but somewhere in here, Nikki Bella chipped a tooth. Because on Talking Smack after the show, she looked like she was on meth or something, so she'll have to, I'm sure she's already gotten that fixed. We ended with the Cutting Edge, with Edge interviewing all of Team SmackDown. Edge has grown his hair long again. He's got a big bushy beard. Apparently he's filming a TV show called Vikings. He certainly looked like one. I love that they had Tony Chimmel announce Edge. He's like, it's almost like he's Edge's personal ring announcer. He did his whole, trademark Rated R Superstar call. That's what he does. He calls him the Rated R Superstar. I'm not even sure that Chimmel ever came out before the crowd. They may have just handed him a microphone in the back and had him do it, and then they banished him back to the boiler room where they keep him. So the Undertaker, in the middle of all of this, he had Team SmackDown out there. They're all jaw-jacking back and forth. The Undertaker comes out unannounced in the middle of all of this. And I have to say, no matter how old he may get, he's getting pretty old. His entrance will never get old. You know, one of the highlights of being at WrestleMania every year for me is being there live for an Undertaker entrance. There's nothing like it. I also love how Undertaker carries his own personal microphone. Have you ever noticed that? He carries his own microphone for these. And it doesn't have the WWE bug, you know, the little WWE block logo thing on it. He probably pulls that shit off in the back. Just a regular mic. You know, he keeps stuffed in his pocket for those times when he's got shit to say. Big holy shit chant for The Undertaker, followed by a chant of "You still got it," which just made me cringe. He didn't seem too thrilled with it either, because he just ignored it and kept on talking. It's like, what is it that he still has anyway, right? It's like he walked to the ring. Mobility? Is that what he still has? So The Undertaker can still walk, guys. You still got it. It's like, Jesus. He said WrestleMania will no longer define who he is. He debuted a new phrase that I'm sure will sell a lot of t-shirts. Taking souls and digging holes. He basically said that he was back on SmackDown, maybe not every week, but the impression I got watching this was he's back at least for a part-time run, and he threatened Team SmackDown that if they lost at Survivor Series, they would have a reason to fear the dead man. I like this a lot. It was not the Undertaker appearance I was expecting. In fact, the way he was talking, he was still doing the Undertaker, the dead man character, but he was channeling... I almost felt like he was channeling some of that old Big Evil Undertaker on like a very low level. Sometimes I kind of wish he would almost go back to that, but you know, then you wouldn't get the entrance, you know, the big entrance and everything like that. He's a lot closer to the end of his career now than he is the beginning of it, and so I'd like him to finish as the dead man. But I also like it when he talks street almost. I guess that's the best way I can describe it. And he just kind of lays down the law, and he did that here, and I did not expect that. So maybe that's what I liked about it more than anything. It kind of caught me off guard. I was not expecting him to be as verbose, I guess, as he turned out to be. But it sure feels to me like a retirement run for him. I mean, how many years have we been predicting The Undertaker's retirement? I know we go through this every single year. But it does look to me also like Team SmackDown is probably losing at Survivor Series. I mean, I could see like Ellsworth having something to do with it, and Styles maybe takes the losing fall, which would piss off The Undertaker. And that could be the impetus for them to have a match at the Royal Rumble after Styles, you know, finishes off Ambrose in that TLC match next month. And here's the idea that I pitched on Twitter. I pitched this online first thing Wednesday morning after I finished watching SmackDown. I put up a post outlining this entire scenario, and by that evening, ironically enough, certain websites were already running with this as news. I haven't seen this reported as news by any reputable site, but somehow, you know, hours later, this became news. This is at least the second time now that that's happened in the last 6 weeks. It's funny how that works. But here's my pitch. We get Styles Undertaker at the Alamo Dome. Everybody's pretty much catching on to this idea now, and it seems like it's very plausible after what we saw on SmackDown. Now, when I floated the idea, I first mentioned Styles and Undertaker many weeks ago. When I first did, I didn't do it with the expectation that Undertaker would actually win the title, but I also didn't expect him to be back for a part-time run or anything like that. If this is his last run, if this is kind of the big kind of go-home run for The Undertaker, I could see The Undertaker winning the championship in Texas, and if the Elimination Chamber show in February is a SmackDown brand pay-per-view, and I believe it would have to be, because I know after that TLC show next month, Raw's got that Roadblock show a few weeks later that's supposed to be headlined by Roman Reigns against Kevin Owens. So if we assume that the Chamber is a SmackDown show, the winner of the Royal Rumble match can be a Raw guy. I mean, maybe Finn Balor if he can make it back in time, or whoever. And at the Chamber pay-per-view, you have AJ Styles and John Cena in the Chamber match. John Cena wins the Elimination Chamber. It comes down to him and AJ. He finally gets a win over Styles, who he hasn't been able to beat. And that sets up Cena and The Undertaker at WrestleMania for the championship. And Cena wins his 16th title to tie Ric Flair, and The Undertaker retires. Cena's already hated, so why not have him tie Flair and beat The Undertaker at the same time, right? Why not? Why not just go for gold? But, I mean, Undertaker losing to John Cena at WrestleMania always seemed like a plausible endgame for him. You know, and I know Cena's not a new guy, but they've done this before. Look, Hogan and Rock at WrestleMania 18. It was this big dream match. Hogan lost, and they talked about how he had just passed the torch, which was comical because Rock had already been there for so many years, and in fact, Rock was already a part-timer by that point. He already had one foot out the door in Hollywood, just like Cena does now. But that's how I see it. I don't think they showed that clip on SmackDown from Cena's debut backstage after he wrestled Kurt Angle of Undertaker coming up to him and shaking his hand and showing him respect. They could have just showed the debut and left it at that, but they chose to have that footage on the show on Tuesday, and believe me, that was no accident. As far as what AJ Styles would be doing at Mania, I could see him and Randy Orton. I'm still waiting for that phenomenal forearm into the RKO spot. Only thing that sucks about that is that's got to be the finish. Like the curb stomp into the RKO at 31, that can't be a near fall. And I would prefer not to see AJ doing the JOB back-to-back years at Mania, but that's how it goes sometimes, you know. But look, maybe somebody gets traded over from Raw between now and then. Maybe Samoa Joe or somebody from NXT gets called up and they could do something with him and Styles. I would imagine that there would be some different options available for what to do with AJ Styles, and he'll be in a high-profile match at WrestleMania. I mean, originally I thought Cena would win number 16 off of him in the main event because that seemed to be the logical progression of the story. Look, everybody who's upset about me pitching an idea that Cena gets the belt back, you got to get over yourselves because they're clearly telling a story here. AJ did not beat Cena once and beat him twice and beat him three times for Cena not to eventually get his comeuppance, for Cena not to eventually get his revenge. That is the natural progression of this story, and it's going to happen at some point, whether you like it or not. So you better get used to it. Now, I'm looking at this in terms of WrestleMania. What's the best story that you can tell, right? If you're going to do a big match and you're going to, you know, change the championship, what do you do? I thought, well, they'll save Cena Styles. They'll get away from that match because they've done it so many times, and they'll save the next big match for WrestleMania, and that's when Cena wins. But then this Undertaker stuff came up, and it got me thinking, and I'm like, you know what? I know Cena and Styles will be the better match. They've had some great matches together. As a match, it'll be much better. But in terms of an attraction, Cena versus Undertaker for the first time at WrestleMania, I mean, they wrestled many years ago, but not at Mania. But to do that match after they've been kept apart for so many years, two of the biggest stars and the championship being on the line, I don't know if you would want to announce in advance that if Undertaker loses, he retires. You could announce that, I guess. You could do title versus career, but either way, that's a big attraction. You know, that is a big attraction. And as long as they find something else worthwhile for Styles to do, I'm okay with that because he deserves to be in a high-profile match. But this is, I think this is the progression that I could see. This is, I think, the direction that they're going to go in. And we'll see what happens, I guess. If they have other plans for The Undertaker and they have other plans for Cena, then they'll go in a different direction. But to me, that's probably the biggest attraction that you can do. And they're probably going to do Big Show and Shaq. That's an attraction, I guess, of a different kind. We could put that on the side. But I think Undertaker and Cena is the direction that they're going to go in here. Now, Survivor Series is tonight. It is taking place, of course, from Toronto. And Wrestle Rumble is doing another one of their pay-per-view pick'ems. They have a Survivor Series pick'em going on tonight. First place winners in the contest get $500 and two luxury suite tickets to the Royal Rumble, courtesy of TicketKingOnline.com. Second and third place winners get $100 each. It's $10 for a single entry. $20 will get you three entries. The winners will be announced tomorrow night before Raw goes on the air. If you're going to sign up, I would urge you to do so before 7 p.m. Eastern tonight. Do it before the pay-per-view starts. Remember, Survivor Series is a four-hour show, so you need to get your ballots in before the pay-per-view starts if you are going to purchase one. So tonight is Survivor Series. I am going to be doing a Sound Off Extra review, just so everybody knows. That'll be going up much later tonight, probably early tomorrow morning. So you'll want to subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. And once the video goes up, you'll get a notification. You can watch it there. It is going up straight to the channel as normal. We're not doing what we did last month. This is going straight to YouTube once it's done. So let's go through the card here. I'll give my predictions. We have Brian Kendrick defending the Cruiserweight Championship against Kalisto. And if Kalisto wins, not only does the Cruiserweight title come to SmackDown, but so does the entire Cruiserweight division, which was quite the bet that Mick Foley made here that his guy would win. I don't know that if I were general manager, I would take an entire division and put them on the line, but that's what Foley did. He's got faith that Kendrick is going to win. I don't think he is. I think Kalisto wins the championship and they take the SmackDown, or they take the Cruiserweights to SmackDown. Now, maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part because I want the Cruiserweights to go to SmackDown. I think they would flourish and do much better there. And I think it makes more sense since they're taping that 205 Live show the same night they do SmackDown. I don't know why they wouldn't be on SmackDown. But, you know, WWE doesn't always go with what makes sense. Logically, logic is not their forte. I'm still picking Kalisto. The Miz defends the Intercontinental title against Sami Zayn. If Zayn wins, he takes the Intercontinental title to Raw. I'm going with Sami Zayn. I think SmackDown gets a big win with Kalisto. I think Raw gets a big win with Sami Zayn. I think the Cruiserweight belt goes one way. The Intercontinental belt goes the other way. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense because now you're going to have the IC and the US titles on the same show. But I think they switched the belt back to The Miz just so Sami Zayn can beat him for it. That's why I think they did it. Otherwise, I don't understand why they did it. I was kind of looking forward to a Dolph Ziggler-Sami Zayn match. And not that having Dolph Ziggler lose, it's not like they're trying to protect Ziggler. I mean, God knows they haven't done that before, but I just figure there has to be some reason why they did this title change when they did, and it's because they're going to do another one here. And Justin on Twitter suggested that maybe Zayn wins the championship and then Miz is traded for Zayn since Miz failed to retain and Daniel Bryan's been looking for any reason to get rid of Miz anyway. I counter that it makes no sense because it makes no sense for Raw. I mean, after winning the Intercontinental title, why would they turn around and trade Sami Zayn over to the blue team? It makes no sense unless they include something else, like maybe an NXT pick. The problem is they haven't explained anything about that stuff to us. Like Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack a few weeks ago said it himself. We're all flying blind here because even he doesn't know what the rules are for trades and all that kind of stuff. Nobody knows. They haven't said word one about any of that stuff. That to me, though, would at least make sense that Raw would be willing to let Zayn go and take the belt with him if they got Miz and an NXT pick out of it. And maybe that pick turns out to be, again, a Samoa Joe or some kind of a big name. Even then, you're still trading a championship back to the other brand, but at least I'm trying to make sense of all this. Just work with me here. Trying to make sense of this. We have the Raw tag teams of New Day, Cass and Enzo, Gallows and Anderson, Cesaro and Sheamus, and the Shining Stars against the SmackDown team of Heath Slater and Rhino, American Alpha, the Usos, the Hype Bros, and Breezango. I'm going with Team SmackDown. I don't know the rules. Again, they don't bother telling us anything. So I don't know if it's when one member of a team is eliminated, the entire team goes to the showers, or if every single person in this match has to be eliminated. I have no idea. They haven't bothered to tell us. If I had a guess, I would guess when one team member is beaten, the entire team is out. But I'm picking SmackDown here. The Raw women, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, Bayley, Nia Jax, and Alicia Fox against the SmackDown ladies of Nikki Bella, Becky Lynch, Carmella, Alexa Bliss, and Naomi. Natalya will be their coach at ringside. I'm going with Team SmackDown. I'm going with the SmackDown women. I do think it's very odd if you look at the match graphics for this pay-per-view that the champions are all team captains in all these matches, except for Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch in the graphic has taken a backseat to Nikki Bella. We can all speculate about why that is. I think it's bullshit, but it is what it is. But I do think the SmackDown women are going to win this match. And you'll notice I mentioned the SmackDown tag teams I think are going to win and SmackDown women are going to win. And I think you can do that because I think the Raw team is winning in the 5-on-5 match. We have Team Raw, Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, and Braun Strowman against Team SmackDown of AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, and Shane McMahon. James Ellsworth will be the mascot in their corner. I do think that Team Raw is going to win, which is why it's okay to have SmackDown win the other matches, because Raw's going to win the big one. And how they're going to get to Owens and Reigns, which is the rumored match for the next Raw pay-per-view, we may find out here on this show. Maybe they're the two sole survivors of this match. I imagine something will happen to set that match up at the Roadblock show next month. And you know, we may see, like I said earlier, that James Ellsworth gets involved in a way that he shouldn't, and it leads to a SmackDown loss. AJ Styles may be the one to take the losing fall for his team, and that could set up a feud and a championship match with The Undertaker. The Undertaker threatened Team SmackDown. You better not lose. Well, he didn't do that for nothing. I think he did it because Team SmackDown is losing, and it will set up The Undertaker's next program. And that brings us to the main event. Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. I have enjoyed the build-up to this match. I am looking forward to this match. This is the match I'm actually looking forward to the most on this show. Believe it or not. Bill Goldberg, 50 years old, hasn't wrestled a match in 12 years. Wasn't particularly known for being a great wrestler, even when he was in his prime. But he's got that explosiveness. He's got that intensity about him. We don't really see a whole lot of that on the main roster these days. And so maybe that's why he stands out to me. I mentioned earlier he claims he tweaked his shoulder during the segment on Raw last Monday. Hopefully he's not hurt too badly. This is a match that you got to keep short. You got to keep it around 10 minutes. You go any longer than that, you're asking for trouble. Goldberg can't do a long match. These two guys together, you think, oh, who's going to lead the match and who's going to, you know, carry the match? If you're trying to get a 15, 20 minute match out of these guys, it's going to be a disaster. I mean, look, it could be a disaster at 10 minutes, but I think at 10 minutes, that would be the perfect length. This is not a match that needs to go on for that long. I think Brock Lesnar is winning. And if they've got an idea to set up a match for him at the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania, I mean, there's been talk of maybe a big surprise tonight at the pay-per-view. That probably would be the spot for it. I don't know who or what that could be. I know I don't want to see Shane and Brock at WrestleMania. I've said that before. I know that's been another rumor floating around. You want to do it at the Rumble? Fine, but not at WrestleMania. And so you start thinking about potential Brock Lesnar opponents for Mania. You think of Rock, although Rock was rumored for some match with Vin Diesel. I mean, there's been so many rumors floating around. Who knows fact from fiction, but I don't see Goldberg being the man to slay the beast. I mentioned a few weeks ago that, you know, we haven't seen Brock Lesnar eat a pinfall like in a singles match since the feud with Triple H. And a lot of you pointed out that I forgot the infamous nutshot from The Undertaker in their match at SummerSlam. Undertaker did pin Brock, although, again, he had to kick him in the balls to do it. So you could argue, well, that wasn't exactly a fair fight. It wasn't a fair win. But, you know, since then, Brock has just been this unbeatable monster. And I think that unless they've got somebody really worthwhile in mind for it, I mean, if Goldberg, if this is his last match and he's going into this thinking it is, it doesn't make any sense to bring in Goldberg to beat Brock and then go home. You know, that just doesn't make any sense. Now, this could be a situation where Goldberg feels pretty good. He doesn't get hurt too badly. And maybe he does come back for another one or two matches. I mean, supposedly that's the reason why Sting lost to Triple H, which was another disaster. But, you know, Sting, I think on one of his DVDs said, well, it was my choice. I thought it was going to be my last match. I wanted to do the honors and I wanted to go out putting somebody else over. It's comical to me that Triple H was the guy he put over. But, you know, if you think about the Sting situation, he went into it thinking, yeah, this is it. This is my last match, so I'm going to lose. And then things went pretty well. And he's like, hey, I think I could still do this. And he had another couple of matches. And unfortunately, we all know how that turned out. But you go into this thinking, this is it. Goldberg's got to lose.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT on Wednesday was promoting a big return. I was anxious to see who it might be. Perhaps Hideo Itami or maybe Neville, since they're not doing anything with him on Raw.
It's Elias Sampson. The return was the Drifter.
Nope, not doing it. Moving on. NXT TakeOver Toronto was last night. Awesome show. Last I checked, the poll I put up on Twitter had it 93% thumbs up. Just 7% thumbs down, and you 7%ers need to have your head examined. I, of course, got the obligatory, was this the best takeover from some of you? I get this every single takeover show. And no, it wasn't. It was not the best one. You know, as much as I love Joe and Nakamura, and I do, I like them a lot, the truth is, I don't think their matches so far could touch some of those takeover main events we saw with guys like Neville and Sami Zayn, and Tyson Kidd. And in fact, one of the best ones may have been the four-way with Neville, Zayn, Kidd, and Tyler Breeze. You know, you see Breeze now on SmackDown tagging with Fandango dressed up like one of the Village People, and it's easy to forget about how good that guy really is. But that is to take nothing away from the matches we saw last night. I almost had a clean sweep in my predictions. I nailed them all, except the main event. Of course, the most important one. That shocked me. That shocked me. It shocked a lot of people in the building. If you saw their, you know, the crowd reactions when Joe got the pin, I did not expect the title change. First, let's talk about that Bobby Roode entrance. Let's start right from the top here. One of the greatest things I have seen all year was that Bobby Roode entrance last night at TakeOver. He had a live choir sing him out to the ring while the crowd sang along to his theme song. This was just fantastic. I give the show a thumbs up for that entrance alone. Given that he and Dillinger are both a couple of Canadian boys, obviously you can imagine how loud the crowd was here in Toronto for this match. This is awesome chant before they even touched. I don't know that I've seen that since the Shield and the Wyatts in 2014. It's been a long time. This was actually a fairly basic match. The match itself, I'll be honest with you, I didn't think the match itself was anything special. You know, no big flashy moves or anything like that. The pacing I thought was kind of slow, and then it picked up at the end. A lot of chops too. I mean, it's and I mean Dillinger's not the only one. I'm not trying to single him out, but like chop after chop after chop outside the ring, chop 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 back in the ring, chop chop chop. It got a little tiresome after a while. It's almost as though they knew, being in Toronto, this crowd's going to be hot. They're going to be cheering for both of us. They're going to be going nuts. We don't have to do too much here. We really don't have to do too much to get the kind of reaction that we want to get. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, you know, any other city, if they did this match in almost any other city, people would not be fawning over it the way that I saw some people last night. It was good. It was good, but the crowd, I think, is really what made this match. Dillinger got a huge pop at one point for using the sharpshooter. The first of two times on this show that a wrestler would pay homage to an old Bret Hart finish. The crowd's love for Bret probably does not bode well for Goldberg tonight, would be my guess. Roode won with his implant DDT. Like I said, good, but not great. But that entrance and the whole presentation of it, that was something special. The Authors of Pain are your second annual winners of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Cup. They beat TM61 with the Last Chapter. Paul Ellering was hanging above the ring in a shark cage, only came into play really when he dropped a chain down into the ring from above for one of his men to use. Unfortunately, he took a swing with the chain at Shane Thorne on the apron, and the chain went flying into the crowd. Oops. It didn't look like anybody got hurt, but that could have ended really, really bad. I mean, you throw a chain into the crowd, that could have gone really badly. So, assuming that nobody was hurt, they're very lucky. As it is, I felt like, obviously, he didn't mean to throw it into the crowd, but I feel like it was a botch. Letting the chain go at all was probably a botch. It may have affected the finish, because the finish just sort of came out of nowhere. You know, I'm not sure if he wasn't supposed to let go of it, or that he wasn't supposed to drop it and let one of the other guys outside the ring pick it up and use it as a weapon. I'm not sure, because they just ended up winning clean. The chain never even came into play. They just won clean with their finish. So I thought it was kind of an underwhelming match, to be honest. I don't know. I guess I was expecting more. Maybe the finish kind of soured me on it a little bit. Again, good, but by no means anything special, especially for the finals of this tournament that they've been building up for weeks. I guess there was never really any doubt about who was going to win the whole thing. Maybe that played a role too, that we all knew the Authors of Pain were going to win. Who's going to beat them, right? Who's going to stop these guys? So I think the key spot that was really crazy in this match came early on. Now, because of the cage hanging above the ring, they had this giant structure next to the ring on the outside in one of the corners. Like, this thing was just gigantic. Like, this gigantic piece of scaffolding, I guess it was supporting the cage that was hanging above the ring. So Shane Thorne did this insane dive. He climbed the scaffolding, this giant structure. He climbed to the top of it. It had to be every bit of 20 or 25 feet up. And he did a dive out to everybody else on the floor. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you should know that if you take a wrestler and you set up scaffolding next to the ring, somebody's going to end up climbing it. It's no different than setting up a table or a ladder. It's almost like catnip for these guys. If you do that, you know they're not going to be able to resist. You know that somebody's either jumping off that ladder or they're going through that table. It's just common sense. So Triple H, William Regal, and Goldust, without the makeup, came out to present the trophy to the winners. No Cody Rhodes this year. Not that that's a surprise, but he was noticeable by his absence. Then we had what may end up being the match of the year. Not even joking when I say that. The Revival against DIY, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, 2 out of 3 falls for the NXT Tag Team titles. If the Bobby Roode entrance alone was enough for me to give this show a thumbs up, then this sealed the deal. Everything else on this show could have been pure shit, and I still would have given it a thumbs up. There are not enough superlatives in the English language for me to use to describe how great this match was. This will be in the conversation for sure for match of the year. Whether it wins it or not, I mean, everybody's list is different, but it'll be on mine. Every time these four guys step in the ring together, it's somehow better than the last time. They always manage to top themselves. First fall went to the Revival off of a shatter machine to Johnny Gargano, a devastating shatter machine. Gargano actually had a little too much momentum going forward. It looked like he basically got spiked right down headfirst into Dawson's knees. Made the move look that much more brutal, but I was worried that he caved his whole face in. Thankfully, he didn't. So later on, Revival used the old heart attack move for a near fall. And Tom Phillips mentioned how Bret Hart is Scott Dawson's favorite wrestler. What's really cool about that is that when this match was over, Bret, who doesn't tweet that often, let alone tweet other people, Bret Hart went on Twitter and tweeted Scott Dawson directly and said, awesome match tonight, 5-star tribute, even Anvil would be proud. So that's got to make Dawson feel pretty good. That's pretty cool. Although I can picture poor Seth Rollins sitting in his hotel room scrolling through his Twitter timeline on his phone and seeing Bret Hart's tweet and wondering, why am I not good enough for this man? What do I have to do? Crying to himself. But, you know, hey, that's how it goes sometimes. DIY took the second fall with their double knee combo to Scott Dawson. Third fall was just incredible. Everything from the second pin, so pretty much that third fall right to the finish, was just outstanding. Outstanding tag team wrestling here. The Revival once again targeted Gargano's leg much the same way they did in their match in Brooklyn. That's how the Revival won that match. They won with a knee bar on Johnny Gargano. He couldn't take the pain and he tapped out. They put Gargano in the same submission here. They were trying to get him to tap. I thought the psychology of this was just fantastic. Everything meant something. You know, it wasn't just like a bunch of, I mean, there were some pretty incredible moves in this match, you know, usually from Gargano and Ciampa, but it wasn't just like big moves for the sake of moves everything here made sense. Everything here looked great. Everything they did meant something. And it was just great. I mean, I don't know what else there is to say about it, really. They tried the same move here again. People knowing that Gargano tapped out a few months ago. Oh my God, he's going to tap out again. But this time he got the ropes. Revival mocked DIY at one point by using their own finish on them, but it backfired and Dawson accidentally superkicked Dash out of the ring, and then they used the shatter machine on Dawson. I thought for sure that was the finish. They got me on that one. But he kicked out. Or somebody broke up the fall. Whatever happened, they did not win. There were so many near falls here at the very end. I mean, you never wanted this match to end. I mean, I see matches sometimes where there's so many near falls, it's like, okay. Like, the match should have ended there. Like, now this thing has just gone too long. I didn't feel that way about this match at all. I wanted it to keep going and going and going. And they would pan to the crowd, and people were on their feet. People were, like, clutching their chest. They had their hands on their head. Their mouths were open. It was like everybody was into this match. The finish was Gargano putting Dash Wilder in his crossface submission. Dawson tried to come in and save him, but he got cut off by Ciampa. Ciampa put him in an armbar submission, so now we have dueling submissions going on. Dash and Dawson, they're like right next to each other. They lock hands. It's like freaking Thelma and Louise going off the cliff. They could see their tag team title reign going off the cliff. They're just grabbing each other's hands, trying to prevent the other from tapping out. Don't tap out. And then finally they tap at the same time, and the place exploded. It seemed to me, and I know there were some people tweeting me who were in the building last night asking me, like, oh, how do we sound? It's crazy in here. It seemed to me like every single person in that building at that moment wanted nothing more than to see these two guys win those belts. Like, more than anything in the world, they wanted these guys so badly to finally win those championships. And when they did, it was just the payoff that they've been waiting for. and it blew the roof off the place. And I give my kudos to all four of these guys. This is one of my favorite matches of the year. I think of the future and where the revival goes from here and what's left for them to do. And it seems pretty obvious where they're probably headed next. Although I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, but, I do worry. I'm not going to lie. I know it makes sense. I know at some point you got to move on, but boy, I look at a team like that. They got that very old school, like the Revival doesn't look like much. They look like a very old school kind of team. I could easily see a team like that getting lost in the shuffle on the main roster, and it would be so sad. It would be such a crime if that were to happen, because those guys are so good. But I also said this last night. I said, you know, I guarantee you, not that I'm trying to be a sourpuss, you know, before the pay-per-view even starts. Look, I hope Survivor Series turns out to be a blowaway show tonight, but I watched this and I thought, there is nothing on that Survivor Series show tonight that's going to be better than this. Nothing. It's impossible. Keith Krasnick on Twitter. I wonder if Solomonster was saying sell the leg to Gargano after the match. You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I wasn't even thinking about it because I was on such a high. The match was so good. But Keith is right. He should have sold the leg. Gargano, he does such a good job of that during the match. Like, you think this guy is crippled. He's in such agony and pain, and then they win. But you know what? You could always make the argument the adrenaline was so high. They won the belts. Maybe he collapsed in the back. It'd be kind of nice if they maybe showed that on their YouTube channel. But you're right. You're right. He should have sold the leg. That's my only criticism. Mickie James looked good in her return. Oh, she always looks good. But she looked good in her comeback here. First match in 6 years, I think, in WWE. I thought she looked good enough to fit right back into the women's division on either Raw or SmackDown. So hopefully she earned herself a contract because they could use some more names. I would put her on Raw, especially with Paige being out for however. I mean, I don't know what's going on with her, but however long Paige is going to be out for, they're one woman down in that division on Raw. I think they could use a veteran presence on that roster. You know, SmackDown already has Natty. Mickey could be that person, I think, on the Raw brand. Plus, Mickey and Charlotte, I think about, like, potential matches. Mickey and Charlotte is a match I'd love to see. And I could definitely see them doing something with Mickey and Bayley. Mickey used to play the whole obsessed fan with Trish. I could see Bayley being that with Mickey, just not as psychotic as Mickie James was. So, anyway, Asuka won with the Asuka lock. Mickey extended her hand to her as a show of respect after the match, and Asuka just held up the women's title and walked out. Savage! Asuka is a savage. But yeah, the finish kind of came quickly. It kind of came out of nowhere. I felt like Mickey, she like tapped immediately. I guess, look, if somebody locked you in the chicken wing and was choking you out, you'd tap quickly too. They do that in the UFC all the time. You know, somebody gets locked in a choke and they know there's no escape, they immediately tap. Some guys are stupid and they refuse to tap and then they pass out. It did seem like it ended a little abruptly, but I still thought it was a good match. And then we had Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura for the NXT Championship. They had multiple violinists playing Nakamura to the ring. They had violinists in the ring as well when he got in there, one in each corner. Even though they, I say playing, I don't know that they were playing, or if they were, you didn't hear it because they were still playing his music over the loudspeaker. So it was more for the visual, I think, than anything else. It's not like you actually heard them playing. But at the same time, I thought, man, this entrance is pretty badass. Just a total rock star entrance for one of the biggest rock stars in all of wrestling. I would still give the nod to Bobby Roode's entrance on this show, but I think this one was a close second. So Joe's knee, I noticed, was heavily taped up. I don't know what kind of injury he's dealing with, but it may have slowed him down. I thought the pacing of this match, it was kind of slow for a lot of it. And seeing his knee taped up like that, I'm putting two and two together here and thinking that may have had something to do with it. It took a while for it to get going, but it did. Again, I wasn't blown away by this match. Nakamura nailed Joe with a Kinshasa to the back of the head, which knocked Joe out to the floor. And the referee went out there, instead of counting, the referee went out there to check on Joe. Nakamura went outside. He was setting up for another knee. But when he came running in, Joe shoved the referee out of the way, and he kicked Nakamura in his little shinskes. He kicked him right in the nuts. And then he gave him a uranage on the steel steps, which is the same move, if you remember, that he used on Nakamura on TV and put him on the shelf for 6 weeks. So then he quickly rolls him inside, sets him up for the muscle buster, nails the muscle buster, and he gets the pin. Just like that. Samoa Joe becomes the first ever two-time NXT champion. And as soon as he won, in a moment that if it doesn't make the next Botchamania, I will be very disappointed, they accidentally played Samoa Joe's first NXT theme. That horrible, horrible, horrible elevator music. I could not believe my ears. I never thought I'd have to listen to that tripe again. I thought we were rid of that horrid, horrid theme. And this guy just won the championship. The first person ever to win the championship for the second time. Big, big pay-per-view, like, main event. He wins, and they play that. It was actually funny. I have to say, it was funny. It did not, it just goes to show, like, everybody who ever said anything about that theme song, who maybe was told, oh, it's not that bad, it's not that bad. Oh, it's bad. It is bad, okay? And this just proves it. And people were kind of confused, like, oh, what the hell's, you know, this is kind of weird, like, what's going on here? And they corrected themselves. Thankfully, they did put his regular music on. But I'm listening to this like, turn it off, ah, turn it off, turn it off. And they did, but it took 30 seconds. It took over 30 seconds for them to turn that freaking music off. Maybe it was a rib. Maybe they were playing a joke on Joe. I don't know. Playing a joke on us. Already, I see lots of people on social media assuming that this means a main roster call-up is imminent for Nakamura. He may be at Survivor Series tonight. He may be on Raw tomorrow night or SmackDown Tuesday, but... And look, I'm not going to sit here and say no. I'm not going to say it's impossible. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, but I don't think it is. I think people are reading a little too much into this. I would not bet on him coming up to the main roster this week. What I would bet on, if I were a betting man, which I'm not, the only guy who's been to Atlantic City and has played nothing but video poker and played twice, won $86 and cashed out. But if I were a betting man, and I were a gambling man, I would say this. NXT is running its first show in Japan in 2 weeks. December 3rd, they're going to be in Osaka. That would be the perfect place for Nakamura to win the championship back. I know it would be a short reign for Joe, but they do this from time to time. He could win the championship back in Japan, and then do one final Joe Nakamura match. I know some people are tired of it already, and I do think some of the matches have been... a little underwhelming. I can't say that I've been blown away by too many of their matches, but one more Joe Nakamura match at TakeOver show in Texas. They're doing one Royal Rumble weekend in January. You can have it as a loser leaves NXT match. And Joe loses, and he sets up a debut for himself. He shows up the next night in the Royal Rumble match. So, now if they don't want to call either guy up yet, then, you know, how about this? Hideo Itami. Hideo Itami has vowed to be at the Osaka show in 2 weeks, no matter what. He got hurt. Thankfully, his injury turned out not to be too serious. He should be back pretty soon. But he vowed, no matter what, right when the injury happened, I don't care if I could wrestle or not, I'm going to be in Osaka at that show. So we know he's going to be there. Maybe you do Joe Nakamura that night, and you have Itami make the save for Nakamura. Maybe Joe's about to do something really evil. Or even after the match, he's about to do something dastardly, he snaps, whatever, Itami makes the save. Or maybe he does it during the match and costs him the championship. Either way, you know, Austin Aries is going to be out for a while with his orbital bone break. And so you can't really do anything with him and Itami for a while. So maybe you do a Samoa Joe Hideo Itami feud, and you build to an NXT championship match between Nakamura and Bobby Roode. You can get a double main event out of it on your next TakeOver show. Thing is, though, it really is time for Joe to move on. I mean, I don't understand the resistance to moving him. Because he's done all he can do. He's not getting any younger. So you move Joe. Here's what I would do. I would send Joe to Raw. Some people are more in favor of him going to SmackDown. You could do stuff with him and AJ Styles. Yeah, I'm sure that would be good and all, but I would send him to Raw. I think Raw needs him more. And I would send the Revival. Remember them? I mentioned them before and how worried I am about them going to the main roster. But they also have done all they can do. I would send Joe to Raw and the Revival to SmackDown. I worry about the Revival being on Raw. I look at Anderson and Gallows and I cringe. I think they would be better off going to SmackDown. We know they can work well with American Alpha. They can have some great matches. Joe goes to Raw, Revival to SmackDown. I see that Dash and Dawson last night both posted cryptic tweets. One guy said, top guy's out. The other one said, been real. So they're out the door. It's just a matter of where. But this takeover show, if you didn't see it, by all means, go on the network. It is worth, if I have to pick spots for you to watch, I'd say watch the whole thing, but definitely watch the Bobby Roode entrance, watch the entire DIY match, watch the women's title match, watch the main event, watch most everything. I think it was not the strongest takeover show of all of them, if you're going to compare them, but it was a pleasure to watch for 2 hours. At no point was I looking at my watch, at no point was I kind of bored looking at the clock. There were some matches I thought that were moving a little slower than I wish they would have, but I wouldn't say I was bored. I enjoyed it. And these takeover shows, they're batting 1,000, because even the ones that are weaker maybe than some other ones, I still say I have yet to see a bad takeover show. There has yet to be a takeover show that is over, and I'm angry, and people are sending angry tweets to me, or I'm like, this sucked, and that sucked, and this was shit. Like, that's never happened. You know, like, they know their audience, they've got the talent, and more often than not, I mean, it's not perfect, but more often than not on NXT, they do well by these guys. And so they've been able to, at least with me, even through this transitional period where NXT television, let's be honest here, has not exactly been setting the world on fire, and I will sometimes even not have the chance to watch NXT on Wednesdays, and when I go back and watch it, I'll fast forward through some stuff, I'll skip through some stuff. Yeah, they're going through a period of transition where they lost a lot of guys, they're trying to make some new stars, they're trying to restock. It's going to happen. That's the nature of developmental. That will happen from time to time. But they have built up enough of a trust with me, like Lucha Underground has done, although I got something to say about that here in a second. But they built up enough goodwill with me as a viewer where I trust that they know what they're doing and that in the end, everything will be fine. Unlike certain other shows that I watch week to week where I have no faith in the people that are running things and they constantly mock and insult their audience. Can't say that about NXT. And you can't go wrong with any of these takeover shows. So definitely go back and check this one out. Now, I mentioned Lucha Underground. Let's talk about this Lucha Underground Aztec Warfare show. This was Aztec Warfare 3, a one-match show with a new Lucha Underground champion crowned. And yes, thy name is Sexy Star. Sexy Star won Aztec Warfare 3. She is now the first female to ever hold the Lucha Underground championship. As you heard in that throwback clip from July in the intro, I had a sense this was coming. I try not to read any Lucha Underground spoilers, so I was not aware of this happening, but I had a sense that this was the direction they were headed. It was not a complete surprise. I kind of had it figured out back when she won the Gift of the Gods belt, but then she lost it to Johnny Mundo, which surprised me, so I was kind of hoping, hey, maybe I'm wrong. But sadly, I was not. She entered at number 12. We found out in a backstage segment at the top of the show that she was going to enter at number 2, but Johnny Mundo, who drew number 12, went and pissed off Dario Cueto, so he had Mundo switch spots with her. He came out at number 2 instead. So she entered the match about halfway through. For those who don't know, these Aztec Warfare matches are like their version of the Royal Rumble, only done better. There are no over-the-top rope eliminations. Wrestlers get random draws. New person enters every 90 seconds until all 20 people have been called. And you eliminate people not by throwing them out, but by pinfall or submission. Matanza, as we know, was starting at number 1. His title would be on the line. He has been the champion since Aztec Warfare 2. Aztec Warfare 2. His very first night in, he won the championship. And they made a monster. And he's been a monster ever since. Nobody's been able to beat this guy. Son of Havoc is out next. Then Jeremiah Crane. Crane hit a sick, sick, sick pile driver on Mariposa at one point. Mariposa, who weighs 130, maybe 140 pounds. He hit the crane driller, and not 20 seconds later, she was fine like nothing ever happened. Forget the pile driving a woman. He pile drove this woman in brutal fashion, and 20 seconds later, she no-sold. It's like nothing ever happened. That pissed me off. Thankfully, Matanza dispatched her shortly thereafter and she was gone. Rey Mysterio made his way out. Johnny Mundo got help from the Worldwide Underground. PJ Black and Jack Evans, they came out. So now you got three buddies in there tearing it up. So Sexy Star finally comes out. And she proceeds to get beaten down by the Worldwide Underground. They dump her out to the floor. Which is where she would spend, by the way, half of her time. She spent most of the match outside, either just laying there or getting her ass kicked. Meanwhile, Pentagon was taken out by the Black Lotus Tribe. It was the first Black Lotus appearance in the temple, I think, all season. And I don't know how much longer she'll be around for, because I believe she's pregnant. I don't know when she got pregnant, or I forgot when she announced it, so I don't know that she'll be doing any wrestling. But the Black Lotus Tribe showed up here. Apparently these other three women that were with her, that were kicking Pentagon's ass, were from the Stardom All Women's Promotion in Japan, and I hope I'm getting their names right. I'm going to attempt to pronounce them here. I believe it was Io Shirai, Kairi Hojo, and Mayu Iwatani, I believe are their names. So they all made their Lucha Underground debut. They kicked Pentagon's ass and led to him being eliminated. Joey Ryan came out later on. He handcuffed himself yet again, as he did last time, to a railing. But unfortunately for him, Mil Muertes, or as Matt Stryker calls him, Mil Muertes, which sounds like something you'd get food poisoning from. It literally translates, I think, to meal of death. He comes out and rips the cuff right off Joey Ryan's wrist, throws him in the ring, and eliminates him. And speaking of Stryker, what the hell is wrong with him? When Joey Ryan came out, he used this analogy to describe him. This is what he came up with. And I hope they didn't write this shit for him. He compared Joey Ryan to using really cheap toilet paper when you wipe and getting some on your finger. That's Joey Ryan, he said. You sick fuck. What is wrong with you? It's a good thing I wasn't eating when I watched this. Muertes and Matanza then went at it. That was cool. Soon everybody is out there attacking Matanza. They all hit their finishes on him, including Rey Mysterio, who hits him with a 619. He goes for another 619. Matanza catches him, but then Rey turns it into a code red, and he pins Matanza. Matanza suffers his very first defeat here in Lucha Underground, and in turn loses the Lucha Underground Championship. This is one of those things where it's like in those Elimination Chamber matches when the champion would be beaten first. Like, didn't that happen once with Edge? And John Cena, I think, got beaten once in a chamber. And it's like, oh, we're going to get a new champion. It was kind of the same thing here. Now we're guaranteed to get a new champion. Matanza lost his shit. He punched a referee out. He destroyed Rey Mysterio to the point where Rey had to be taken out on a stretcher. This is after Johnny Mundo pinned him to eliminate him. Matanza even shoved down Dario in a fit of rage. And then he walked to the back. The Worldwide Underground went after Sexy Star again. And Helico, in all of this, made his big return in the most Angelico way possible, diving off a balcony onto the bad guys down below. It's like the third time this guy's done that balcony dive. Sexy Star pinned Johnny Mundo, Mil Muertes pinned the Mac, and so we were left with Sexy Star and Mil Muertes. And that's where the fun ended for me. I enjoyed this match up until this point. Really good stuff. Still probably the weakest, I would say, of the three Aztec Warfare matches, but by no means a bad match. But we had Mil Muertes, who is a monster of a man, beating the shit out of Sexy Star, punching her right in the face, only for Mil to take a bump through a table that he brought into the ring, double stomped by her off the top, and she pins Mil Muertes to win the Lucha Underground Championship. Now, I said it 4 months ago. I did not want to see Sexy Star win the Lucha Underground title. I just didn't, and I still don't. I cannot buy her in the role. And I know I'm saying that about a show where Katrina is actually a 500-year-old demon, and Aerostar beams himself up into the cosmos, and Dario Cueto is talking to Lorenzo Lamas about host bodies. I understand all of that, and I accept the show for what it is. But Sexy Star as the Lucha Underground champion is a fail. Add to the fact, she's not that good. I mean, she's not Dana Brooke, but she's not that good. The match she had with Mundo a few weeks ago that looked like it was edited to all hell, I can imagine how that must have come off live. Now, I know why they did it. They wanted to generate a buzz. They want to get people talking, and they wanted to be able to pat themselves on the back and say, hey, look at us. We're the first group to ever put our title on a woman. And you know what? I hope they got out of it whatever they were looking for. Doesn't seem like it created too much buzz to me, but I guess, you know, they'll look at their ratings and they'll know better than I would if it worked or not. It was bad enough when she was beating Pentagon a couple of seasons ago. It's even worse watching her pin Mil Muertes. But I will say this. In that clip from SoundDuff 450 that you heard there in July at the beginning of the show that I played, you heard me make one request. Please, whatever you do, don't have her be the one to beat Matanza for the title. And in fact, she did not beat Matanza for the title. They went out of their way to protect Matanza by having everybody hit their finish on him before Ray pinned him. And then after he lost, he snapped and had Mysterio taken out on a gurney. That's the way Matanza should lose if he has to lose. So thankfully, he was not pinned by Sexy Star. They at least got that right. But they can't keep that title on her for very long. It's like, who's she going to face? How many people do we have to watch her beat? Hopefully none. Hopefully the answer is zero. At the beginning of the show, Johnny Mundo, he told Dario, he said, look, if I don't win Aztec Warfare, I'm cashing in my Gift of the Gods championship next week. So it is possible that Johnny Mundo could win the title from her as early as this Wednesday. Let us hope. Let us hope. Before this week is out, Johnny Mundo is our new Lucha Underground champion. They got their big moment with her winning the title. They got their feel-good moment. Now it's time to get back to business. Every Lucha Underground champion up to now has been an incredible performer. Prince Puma, incredible performer, one of the best in the business. Mil Muertes, a real-life human wrecking machine this guy is. Phoenix, incredible performer. Matanza, outstanding big man. And now Sexy Star. And I'm sorry, but there's nothing special about her. She's had her moments. That No Mas match with Mariposa is one of my favorite matches all year. It told a great story. They were telling a story here too. I get that. But that doesn't mean I have to like it. So hopefully it's a very short run. One last note. I don't know how I missed this, but 2 weeks ago, Bret Hart was honored at an award ceremony in Calgary with the Bob Edwards Award, which was named after Canada's first media celebrity. I mention this because the award recognizes quote, provocative individuals who are not afraid to speak their minds. How perfect is that? They ought to rename it the Bret Hart Award. I can't think of a more perfect award for Bret Hart to win, so congrats to him. So let's get to your mailbag questions. We got a kind of a packed mailbag this week. You could email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Dilith in Sri Lanka. This might be our first email from Sri Lanka. Why should I care about the main event of Survivor Series this year? There is nothing on the line except bragging rights. In the past few years, Survivor Series pay-per-view has not really felt like anything special. Last year, most of the traditional elimination matches were thrown together at the last minute. Why do people consider this pay-per-view part of the top four or five that the company has to offer? Nostalgia. I mean, that's because that's how it used to be, right? Survivor Series used to be this big pay-per-view, and so now we want Survivor Series to be great again. It's clearly the weakest of the big four, but, you know, they're trying. I mean, they're trying to make it feel more special. I've said before, I consider Money in the Bank to be more of a big four show than Survivor Series, but now with the brand split, Money in the Bank is probably going to be brand specific. And with Survivor Series, you get stars from Raw and SmackDown. So it should at least feel more special. Plus, it's 4 hours. You know, to them, you just make something 4 hours. Let's stretch it out and make it 6 hours. That makes it a better pay-per-view. No, it doesn't. But they're trying to make it feel like a bigger deal. But I do agree on the 5-on-5 match. You know, there's nothing on the line. I wish they would have gone with my idea from a few months ago to do something similar to what Major League Baseball does with the All-Star Game, where they give the winning division home field advantage in the World Series. I mean, I mentioned this months ago. If Raw wins, then the Universal title would headline WrestleMania. And if SmackDown wins, then the WWE title would headline WrestleMania. Now, does it negate the Royal Rumble match a little bit? Yeah, it does. But, you know, the winner of that could still earn a championship match at WrestleMania. That doesn't have to change. I mean, it's a moot point anyway because they're bringing back the Elimination Chamber in February. So you know the winner of that is going to get a WWE title match at WrestleMania. So, but I mean, there's other ideas you can come. I mean, look, how about this? How about the winning brand tonight gets a draft pick from NXT? So if Raw wins, Stephanie and Mick Foley get to pick somebody from the NXT roster to come to Raw. Right? That's two different ideas I just outlined right there. I don't know why they couldn't take 5 minutes to come up with one themselves. They used to have a pay-per-view where Raw guys wrestled SmackDown guys for bragging rights. It was called Bragging Rights. And it did so well, it only lasted 2 years before they gave it the boot. There's a reason for that. People don't care about bragging rights. They want something tangible to be on the line. Hunter, in Texas. Realistically, do you see Paige coming back to WWE television, or do you think they will release her before then? She already has two wellness strikes against her and went behind WWE's back and had major neck surgery done. Do you think we have seen the last of Paige on TV? No, I don't. I don't. I do think that in the end, she'll be back. I think we'll actually see her back on TV around WrestleMania time. I guess it depends how she's progressing in her recovery, but I don't believe that this is the last time that we have seen her on TV. Now, what happens after that? I mean, she can come back and then end up getting a third strike. She gets that third strike, it's all over. So, and we still don't exactly know what the hell happened. You know, we've heard stories about how she failed the first two, and who the hell knows? But I do think that we'll see her back on TV. Curtis from Ontario, Canada, site of tonight's pay-per-view. With Survivor Series marking the 4-year anniversary of The Shield debuting on the main roster, I wanted to get your opinion on what was their best match together as a team, what has been each man's best match as a solo competitor, and which of the three has had the best solo run thus far? Oh, God. I mean, they've had so many great matches as a team. You know, the thing is, so many of those six-mans that they had on TV blend together after all this time. But I would say the first match, I think, with the Wyatt family at the Elimination Chamber show in 2014 is probably their best, followed by... I think was it the TLC show in Brooklyn? Because I was at that show. And I think it was the TLC show at the Barclays Center. They had The Shield. It was The Shield's first match. That's right. It was on that show. It was The Shield against Ryback, Kane, and Daniel Bryan. That was a great match. I would put that up there as well. And I would say I have to show love to this match. Now, it wasn't six-man. It was a regular tag team match. But I would say the tag match at Battleground in 2013... with the Rhodes brothers against Rollins and Reigns. That was the match where Cody and Goldust Jobs were on the line. And Dusty gave Dean Ambrose the bionic elbow outside the ring. I love that match. I loved that match. That match is everything I love about pro wrestling. Just like the Revival DIY match last night from TakeOver. This is in the same category of things that just make me love pro wrestling. Now, as solo competitors... Yeah, for Rollins, I would go with the triple threat at the Royal Rumble against Cena and Brock. I think that was probably his best, as a solo competitor, I think that was probably his best match. For Ambrose, I remember really liking that Lumberjack, I'd have to go back and watch it, but the Lumberjack match that he had with Rollins at SummerSlam a few years ago, I actually might go with that one. I remember that being kind of wild and crazy. And Roman Reigns... You know, Roman Reigns has had a lot of great matches. I mean, there are people who just refuse to admit this. They feel like, you say Roman Reigns has had great matches, like he's some kind of great wrestler. You know what? Hey, if it walks like a duck and it talks like it, people have said this about John Cena. John Cena only knows 5 moves. He's a terrible wrestler. Meanwhile, you can rattle off a list of 10 or 15 outstanding matches that John Cena has had over the course of his career. And people would still crap on it and say, yeah, well, you know, he was working with good workers. He was working with Shawn Michaels and he was working with CM Punk. So of course they were great matches. The fact is he still had great matches and Roman Reigns has had a lot of great matches. So I give him credit for that. And I think people, you know, should give him credit for that. So of those matches, I'm tempted to go with one of the ones he had with AJ Styles this year, because I think both of them, the one in April and May, were both awesome. But I am going to stick with my gut. I'm going to go with the match he had with Brock at WrestleMania 31. I thought that was an excellent match. But I think all of them are good. You can't go wrong with any of those. So I think those were all good choices. As far as which one has had the best solo run so far, I know Roman Reigns won a Royal Rumble, and he won the championship in the main event of WrestleMania. I know they want him to be the guy. But for my money, I think Seth Rollins has had the overall better solo run so far. They've, you know, focused on him as like a top guy, mostly as a heel, but they've, you know, focused on him, I think, more than any of the other two consistently. I mean, he was champion for a long time before he got hurt. And even then, you know, that who knows what would have happened had he and Reigns had that match at Survivor Series. Supposedly Reigns was going to beat him for the belt anyway, but he had a nice long run. He was the authority's chosen boy. He was on top. He was in all the segments and main events every single week. They ran with him longer as champion than they ever have Reigns so far. Reigns has had the belt 3 or 4 times, but he's never had that one long run. I think Rollins has been one of the MVPs of this company for the last few years. I would argue that AJ Styles is the MVP of 2016, but Rollins has been more important when you look at how he's been used and how long I think he has spent on top. Now they have him positioned as the top babyface on the Raw brand. So I would put Rollins ahead of Reigns at this point. It may not end up that way. I mean, ask me that question in 2 years or 5 years, I may have a different answer. But I think so far, Rollins has had the stronger singles run. Drew in L.A., I wanted to get your thoughts on if you think one of the reasons WWE is oversaturating its product is to hurt Lucha Underground, TNA, and Ring of Honor. My thinking is if WWE burns people out on the amount of wrestling it puts out in a given week, it would make people less likely to spend more time watching wrestling from other promotions. I realize this comes off as a conspiracy theory, but I would not put it past Vince McMahon, partially with WWE trying to keep indie promotions away from WrestleMania each year. They do it, here's why they do it. They do it because they think that they can make more money by putting on more shows, and because they have a network, and they need that network to succeed. This network has to succeed. It would be a disaster for their business if it did not succeed. And I think so far it is. I mean, the numbers are probably not exactly where they want them to be, but the network seems to be doing well, and the network you would think is only going to grow as time goes on. Doesn't help when they offer 3 free months of the network. I mean, that seems kind of stupid to me, but they're trying to bring as many people into the tent as they possibly can. That really is the biggest reason why they do it. More content, more subscribers. But you're not totally wrong. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, take the tinfoil hat off. You're actually not totally wrong, and I'll tell you why. WrestleMania weekend, for example. They know that if they do an NXT show the night before WrestleMania, when there's a bunch of indie shows in town, people are going to have to choose between shows. Here in New York, SummerSlam, right? SummerSlam weekend last summer. Ring of Honor had a show booked months in advance for MCU Park in Brooklyn. It's the minor league baseball stadium here. It's, you know, 20 minutes away from where I am. And I've been to a lot of the shows there. WWE, what did they do? They went and scheduled an NXT show that same night for the Barclays Center, which is only a few miles away. Now, was it done just to screw with Ring of Honor? Probably not. I'm sure that wasn't the sole purpose behind it. But they knew what they were doing. They had to know they were running the market. I mean, they're running the same area. The same night. They knew what they were doing. And it did hurt Ring of Honor that night. There were people who had to choose NXT over Ring of Honor or Ring of Honor over NXT. I know this because I was one of those people. I got tickets to the NXT show. I made my choice. I would have loved to have gone to the Ring of Honor show, but there's no way I could get back and forth. So I chose NXT. And I'm very happy I did. I think that was the Sasha Bailey match in Brooklyn. I'm very happy with my decision. I don't regret my decision, but I was one of those people who had to make a choice. So I don't think you're just a crazy conspiracy theorist. I think there are times when they do this, and they're not stupid. They know what's going on around them at all times. And when it's in their best interest to do so, they will do stuff like that. Denzel in Atlanta. The Cena-Heyman connection. I was watching some of John Cena's old feuds with Undertaker, Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle, and Brock Lesnar in 2002 to 2004. I was wondering if Paul Heyman and his SmackDown team were more responsible for John Cena's rise than anyone else outside of Vince McMahon. I watched a lot of this of his stuff then, and 3 years in, his act was still fresh. Do you think if Cena had Heyman still with, I guess with him meaning on the same brand, that the stale nature of his character would have changed? I don't think it would have mattered because it was still Vince McMahon in charge. Right? I mean, once he went to Raw and had the feud with Jericho that summer, that's when the Let's Go Cena sucks chant started. By that point, Vince had already made up his mind that, okay, this is the guy. Cena and Batista could have gone either way. Vince made a call. I'm going with John Cena. This is going to be my golden goose. And I think once he made that call, like, if Heyman was writing for Raw, let's say, instead of SmackDown, it might have been a little bit better, maybe. Maybe he would have, you know, he wouldn't have had some, you know, he would have had more creative leeway to make things more edgy with Cena, and he could have done certain things that they didn't do. But honestly, I really don't think in the long run it would have mattered. Now, if Vince McMahon gave Heyman full creative control and said, hey, I want you to write Monday Night Raw, I'm going to back off, you write the show for me, then yeah, I think Heyman would have been smart enough to sense the backlash, and he would have reacted to it. Believe me, Paul Heyman would not have allowed John Cena to get booed out of the building month after month after month after month and would have just not done anything about it. So, you know, Vince made a call that we got to sell t-shirts, we got to sell merch, and it's important, and we can't turn him, and we can't turn him. I don't know that Cena would have, or Heyman, I should say, would have made that same call. So yes, I think Heyman would have tried some things with John Cena, maybe a heel turn, and he would have tried to keep that character fresh and not have the people reject him as hard as they did. But that's assuming that he had the full control to do that. And if you work for Vince McMahon, you never have the full control to do anything without Vince McMahon's approval, right? It's his show. He runs the show. He calls the shots. That's just how it is. And that's how it's always going to be until Vince McMahon is not in the picture anymore. Nothing will ever change. But I mean, you know, you got to remember something else here about this whole let's turn John Cena heel thing. They didn't really have anybody that I can remember. Maybe Randy Orton in 2009, 2010. There was a period there when Orton split from Legacy where he was hot as shit. So you can say maybe Orton, but other than maybe him, there really wasn't anybody until CM Punk got hot in 2011 who I think could have filled Cena's shoes as the number one hero, as the number one babyface. Punk almost would have been like the anti-hero, but he was so hot in late 2011 that I think that was their best chance to do the switch. If they were ever going to do like a double turn or turn Cena heel and have somebody kind of take his spot and yeah, maybe do as well selling merch and stuff like that, I think that was the time. See, Punk at that point was the closest thing they had to somebody like that, not named John Cena. Now, I had pitched an idea a long time ago about building to the Rumble that year in 2012 and John Cena becoming, I don't want to say corporate, like I don't want them to just copy off what they did with Rock back in the late 90s, but he would have been like the corporate guy. Like, okay, everybody already knows that John Cena is favored by, you know, the corporate hierarchy in WWE. He fits the mold perfectly of what they want a champion to be. And they could have used that for great heel heat. Right? They could have generated a ton of heel heat on this guy, people resenting him, and it would have made Punk that much hotter. Like, that was the time to do it. The timing just didn't work out because of the Rock match that they were promoting for WrestleMania 28. And that was a huge match. So, I get it. They didn't want to ruin their plans. They had this huge attraction with Rock wrestling for the first time in however many years, and they didn't want to mess that up. So the timing just, it just didn't work out. But Heyman would not have been, I don't think, as stubborn as Vince was. And again, who's to say? I've listened to Heyman speak in interviews when they ask him about how he stays plugged into the times. You got to evolve or you're going to get left behind. And everything he says makes sense. And I get the sense that he would be more open to things than Vince would. He's also 20 years younger than Vince McMahon. So that may have also had something to do with his whole, hey, you got to stay in tune with the times. You got to evolve. You're probably a lot less likely to evolve when you're 70 as opposed to when you're in your 40s or your 50s. Vineet from Mumbai, India. Assuming WWE wanted Jim Cornette back as a manager, which wrestler could you see him managing? Well, that's not going to happen. But if it did, hands down, The Revival. I could absolutely 100% see him managing Dash and Dawson. I know Cornette's apparently had high praise for them on his podcast before. Cornette has managed some great tag teams back in his day, in case you forgot. I think he'd fit right in with those guys. Old school all around. That's who I see him with. Jamie from Waterloo, Ontario. Second Ontario question here. My question is regarding Hulk Hogan not wrestling at WrestleMania 20. We last saw Hogan in the summer of 2002, losing to Brock Lesnar on SmackDown. We would not see him again until 03, feuding with The Rock and then Vince McMahon. Hogan went on to do the Mr. America gimmick and then disappeared shortly thereafter. Were there creative differences that led to Hogan's departure? Was there ever a planned opponent for Hogan at WrestleMania 20? No. I mean, Hogan was gone long before. Believe me, they didn't have WrestleMania plans already in mind for Hulk Hogan in June, you know, which is when he left of the previous year. So I doubt very seriously they had an opponent in mind for him at Mania. Hogan was gone long before then. It was creative differences. And we've heard the story with Hogan before. It was creative differences. It's you know, you mentioned him losing to Brock Lesnar on SmackDown, as the story goes. Hogan did that with the understanding that he would get Brock in a rematch at Survivor Series and would win the championship, which is completely ridiculous. And when that didn't happen, he took his ball and went home. And, you know, they patched things up a few months later and he came back. But this is not the first time that we've heard of these creative differences with Hulk Hogan. They put him under a freaking mask on TV every single week. And he didn't think that he should be appearing on TV that often. I actually side with Hogan in this case. He felt rightly that he would be more of an attraction, or he should be more of an attraction, and they were watering down that attraction, which they absolutely were. The same thing would happen if, let's say, Brock Lesnar was on television every single week. After a while, it wouldn't be special anymore. And can you imagine these writers getting their hands on Brock, having to come up with dialogue and shit for him to do every single week, and how old that would get? Thank God that doesn't happen. You also wouldn't have a roster left if Brock Lesnar was on the show every single week. So it's, I think, to everybody's benefit that he's not. But I remember some interview that one of the writers did many years ago. He was a writer for WWE around that time. Might have been on the SmackDown brand. And he claimed, if I'm remembering this right, that the plan had been to blow off the Mr. America Vince McMahon feud at the Vengeance pay-per-view. I guess it would have been in July. I think this is when Vengeance usually was. Although I remember Vengeance being in December one year. But I think it was the Vengeance show. And they were going to have a blow-off match between them. It was going to be Mask against Hair. Which is interesting. I guess Hogan would unmask if he lost. And Vince would have his head shaved bald if he lost. Which is interesting given that Vince did end up having his head shaved bald a few years after that. I don't know what the outcome of the match would have been. It's possible, I guess, that Vince would have won and Hogan would have been unmasked. But had Vince had his head shaved in 03, we may never have gotten the Battle of the Billionaires with Trump at WrestleMania, which turned out to be one of their biggest matches of all time. But the timeline does make sense because Hogan quit in June. In fact, I think his last show was at Madison Square Garden. But yeah, he quit in June. And then at that next pay-per-view, Vince ended up wrestling Zach Gowen, which seemed totally random. So yeah, it makes sense. I'm sure that spot originally was intended for Hogan. That probably would have been the blow-off to their feud. Zach from Michigan, where they are still counting votes in the election, if you can believe it. Who has the best punch of all time? I get the punch question from time to time, and my answer never changes. My answer is always the same. For my money, Bret Hart threw the best wrestling punch that I've ever seen, but Jerry Lawler is up in the conversation with him. Steve Austin I put in that conversation. And Scott Hall. Scott Hall threw a mean punch. So Brett would be tops on my list, but those are the four names I always think of when people ask me that question. Malik from Bayside. If you were ever in a movie getting ready for a big battle, like a big battle scene, what song would you choose for it? I love the randomness of the question, so I just went with it. My song, the song that I would use, is The Game Has Changed by Daft Punk. Awesome, awesome song. It's an instrumental. There's no words or anything. It was in one of the, they did the soundtrack for the second Tron movie. And so I think that's where it's from. It's got that, I just got an address for the bad guy I've been chasing the entire movie and now I'm going to fuck him up vibe to it, you know? Like, that's what I think of when I hear that song. And it gets me pumped up. And I think that would be the perfect scene, or the perfect song for a battle scene. Jay from the Bronx, what are your thoughts on Vince Russo? Any question that starts out that way will not end well. What are your thoughts on Vince Russo on his podcast saying that as a Christian man, he doesn't think women were created to be leaders? He said he doesn't think a woman is supposed to run this country because in the Bible, the woman was taken from the man's rib. Men were created first, women came second, and he says that's how God wanted the pecking order to be. What do you think? Well, the man did work for Dixie Carter off and on for 10 years, so can you blame him? Can you blame him for thinking, hey, women can't be leaders? No, in all seriousness, I don't think he believes half the shit that he says. And if he does believe it, then that's even scarier. I thought he stopped talking about wrestling on his shows. Isn't that what happened? He gave up on wrestling or something. He stopped talking about pro wrestling on his podcast. So this is the kind of shit apparently that he's talking about now. This is what happens when you don't talk about wrestling anymore. You start, you get diarrhea of the mouth and you start spouting off stupid shit like this. Apparently he's got nothing else to talk about. But he just does it for attention. I fully believe he just says things like this for attention. And the best thing to do, unlike what I just did, the best thing to do, just don't give him any. Just don't give him the satisfaction. Neil from Chicago, we'll end with this. I remember you once floated a hypothetical idea of a Brock Lesnar versus Floyd Mayweather match with Ronda Rousey getting involved. I have to tell you, I really don't remember that. I'm not saying I didn't. I pitch ideas I pitched like six ideas on this show today alone, so it's possible I did, but I just don't remember. But anyway, he says, you have the power to book one of these matches for WrestleMania, buy or sell, in terms of a story, fan interest, and overall business. Brock Lesnar versus Floyd Mayweather, or Brock Lesnar versus Conor McGregor. To me, it's been there, done that with Mayweather. He's already been on a WrestleMania before. If they could get Conor McGregor for anything, even like a non-physical segment, they would be crazy not to. They would be fools not to get him on WrestleMania, on TV, building to WrestleMania, doing something. The guy is tailor-made for WWE. Maybe not his language, he'd have to clean that up a little bit, but the guy is tailor-made for pro wrestling, and the thing is, they're both, you look at Mayweather and you look at McGregor, they're both small guys, right? You compare them to Brock Lesnar, they're both small guys. So if that bothers you, if you can't buy either one of them in a fight against Brock, you still go with McGregor, because McGregor, you know, it's fighter against fighter, not fighter against boxer. I think it'd be an easier match to sell. Conor's the one making headlines right now, not Mayweather. Unless he's getting himself into another domestic dispute or something. Buy on Conor. Absolutely, buy on Conor. That'd be huge. As a match, it'd be tough to do, again, because of the size difference. But you know what? If you can get that guy in and that's what he wants to do and Brock wants to do it, you find a way to do it. That's the thing about pro wrestling, right? It ain't real. So you can book it. You can use magic tricks and smoke and mirrors and come up with whatever idea you want to do to get you through the match. You can do that. You can't do that in UFC. You can't do that in boxing, but you can do that in WWE. So if he's down and they're willing to pay him and they can get him in, you get him in, because that guy is going to be a difference maker for you. Keep sending in your questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @solomonster. Follow me tonight. I'll be live tweeting during the Survivor Series. I'll have a poll up after, thumbs up, thumbs down. Don't forget, there'll be a Sound Off Extra review of Survivor Series going up later tonight or early tomorrow morning. So hit the subscribe button on our channel, and that way you will be notified whenever a new video goes up. Continue to support the show in any way that you can. Keep spreading the good word. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you can do so on thesolemonster.com. Get yourself a nickname and a shout-out here on the show. Keep using our Audible link, audibletrial.com/solemonster. Don't forget the Black Friday sale on ProWrestlingTees.com starts this Tuesday. Get 20% off all orders, including in our store. So if you want to buy a Sound Off shirt, this will be the week to do it. And we will be back next weekend for a brand new podcast. That'll be episode 471. I want to take this moment to wish everybody a very happy Thanksgiving. I hope everybody has a great holiday coming up this week. And until next time, be well, stay safe, enjoy Survivor Series, and we'll see you back here next time. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off. What?
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the big show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Solemonster Sounds Off. Since 2007, The Solemonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster Sound Off.